Good morning. It's 7 a.m. and 27 degrees in Central Park. We'll see a high 34, and it will be partly sunny. This Wednesday, February 10th, 2021, you're tuned to listener-sponsored, non-commercial, free speech radio, WBAI. Coming up next, a new day. Dr. Ramon Talaj, and we'll take a look at the challenges of transforming an expensive, wasteful, inefficient, and corrupt healthcare system that's failing all Americans, especially those most vulnerable among us. The pandemic has exposed the utter inability of American healthcare to meet the most elementary of human needs. America has 4% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's coronavirus deaths, with a disproportionate impact, of course, on poor communities of color. We'll welcome Dr. Talaj in this conversation. He's the chairman of Somos Community Care, a physician-led community health network, uniting over 2,500 diverse doctors serving low-income immigrant communities across the city. Stay tuned for headlines. And this is your update on the COVID-19 pandemic. Officials with the World Health Organization said yesterday, February 9th, that it was very unlikely the coronavirus pandemic originated in a Chinese laboratory. The finding comes after a two-week investigation in Wuhan, China, conducted by the World Health Organization and a team of Chinese health officials. It runs counter to a theory floated by U.S. Senator Tom Cotton, Republican from Arkansas, and others suggesting that the SARS-CoV-2 virus may have escaped from the Wuhan Institute of Virology and that the breach was by the Chinese government. Peter Ben Embara, a member of the World Health Organization team, said, quote, "It was very unlikely that anything would escape from such a place. And we also know that when lab accidents happen, they are, of course, extremely rare," unquote. This is Peter Ben Embarak speaking during a press conference yesterday.
all the work that has been done on the virus and trying to identify its origin continue to point towards a natural reservoir of this virus and similar viruses in bat population. However, the findings suggest that the laboratory incident hypothesis is extremely unlikely to explain the introduction of the virus into the human population.
Mbarak also said, quote, the WHO, which is trying to determine the origins of the virus, first detected in bats, visited the Wuhan Institute of Virology, and all but ruled out that it had accidentally leaked from inside that facility. Officials at the lab provided detailed descriptions of the center's research, both present and past, on projects involving bats and coronaviruses and more advanced projects, unquote. But while the WHO has concluded that the Wuhan Institute of Virology is not likely the virus led to the deaths of more than 2.3 million people worldwide, it still cannot explain how the coronavirus made the jump to human beings. Mbarak continued.
So in terms of understanding what happened in the early days in December 2019, did we change dramatically the picture we had beforehand? I don't think so. Did we improve our understanding? Did we add details to that story? Absolutely.
Mbarak added, quote, we know the virus can persist and survive in conditions that are found in cold and frozen environments. But we don't understand if the virus can then transmit to human and under which conditions, unquote. Meanwhile, Senator Cotton continued to press his contention that the virus may have leaked from the lab in Wuhan and lashed out at the press for calling his assertion a conspiracy theory. This is Republican Senator Tom Cotton speaking to Fox News on Monday.
Look, it was a year ago this week that I started demanding investigations into the labs in Wuhan and whether they could have been the source for the plague that China unleashed on the world. You know, the media at the time hyperventilated that I was spouting conspiracy theories. Meanwhile, a year later, we're still dealing with a fallout here in America, in no small part because of Chinese communist malevolence and negligence.
And I think we need to go to music for a second. Michael, can we go to music?
Thank you.
And we're back. And we're back with headlines. We're going to go to the Oath Keepers. A man by the name of Thomas Caldwell is accused of plotting the Capitol insurrection of January 6th. Federal authorities allege that he is the leader of the far-right Oath Keepers and an orchestrator of the insurrection at the U.S. Capitol building, and that he previously worked for the FBI. Caldwell was arrested on January 19th on four federal counts, including conspiracy to commit an offense against the U.S. And this was during the January 6th Capitol building insurrection in Washington, D.C. The Oath Keepers is a far-right militia that supports former U.S. President Donald Trump and peddles conspiracy theories. This, according to the Anti-Defamation League, the Oath Keepers believe that violent civil war in the U.S. is imminent, and they have said that they are the last line of defense against tyranny. According to Caldwell's attorney, Thomas Plofkin, Thomas Caldwell, who's 66 years old and who lives in Virginia, worked as a section chief for the FBI from 2009 to 2010. And he did this after retiring from the Navy. The defense said Caldwell, who denies being an Oath Keeper, has had top secret security clearance since 1979, which required multiple special background investigations. Caldwell's lawyer says his client also ran a consulting company that did confidential work for the government. The prosecutors say Caldwell and others wrote messages to each other to arrange hotel stays near Washington, D.C. days before the violent attack on the U.S. Congress building. A Facebook message to Caldwell says, quote, "We'll probably call you tomorrow, mainly because I like to know what the F the plan is." That's WTF, short for "what the F." "You are the man, Commander," unquote. This according to court documents. Let's listen to former Homeland Security official Frank Khalifu talking about the military tactics used at the Capitol insurrection, and this is play six.
You know, small unit tactics are ways that military can blanket and communicate and try to get to a primary target that they have. This isn't out of a basement. This isn't playing a whole lot of video games. This is something that there was some training here. There's no question. At the end of the day, a small number of sophisticated actors can do a whole lot of harm.
And it's 7:17 and 27 degrees in Central Park. You're tuned to listener-sponsored WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York. I'm Johanna Fernandez, your host of A New Day, and we had a bit of a technical mini-disaster, I would say. But I think we've recuperated. Thanks for tuning in and for being patient.
When the damn thing breaks, I'll be there to take you home. 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 When the damn thing breaks, I'll be there to take your pulse. The memory of a dove. Oh, oh. When the dusk dissipates, I'll grow patient like a dove. Oh, I'll be the border resting on the blade swing. Sweet sea, so right above your
And that was a toll by nigh palm. The pandemic has exposed the utter inability of American healthcare to meet the most elementary of human needs. According to the New York Times tracker, we have lost 468,088 people to COVID-19. That's almost 500,000 people. And according to statisticians, we're expected to lose 600,000 people by this summer. There appears to be some good news, however. There's a 35% decrease in the rate of infection. That's from the average infection rate 2 weeks ago. Still, the United States has 4% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's coronavirus deaths. Do these figures sound familiar to you? I'm going to repeat them. The United States has 4% of the world's population, but 25% of the world's coronavirus deaths. These figures are quite familiar. They mirror the place of the United States in the world when it comes to global incarceration rates. You've probably heard the statistic that the United States has 4% of the world's population and 25% of the world's prisoners. When we see this kind of symmetry in statistics in one country vis-a-vis the world, we know that there are deep structures of oppression at work. And we know that the oppression is racialized. And in the realm of coronavirus infections and deaths and imprisonment, the victims are overwhelmingly Black and Latinx. Essentially, what we see is a system of capitalist healthcare organized around private medicine, where public health doesn't stand a chance because there's no infrastructure for it. It's catch as catch can. Amidst the chaos, however, there is a network of providers attempting to improve primary care in New York City and attempting to address the virus and its many problems as they're impacting poor communities of color. SOMOS is the name of that network, and it serves the most vulnerable residents in New York City. And it's quite a poetic title, SOMOS, because SOMOS in Spanish means we are. Immigrant doctors for immigrant patients, reads one of its videos. SOMOS Community Care is a physician-led community health network uniting over 2,500 diverse doctors serving low-income immigrant communities of color across the city. And to discuss this coronavirus crisis in the city, but also the organization that he helped bring to life, we welcome Dr. Ramon Talaj, the founder and chairman of SOMOS Community Care. Dr. Talaj, welcome to A New Day.
Thank you for allowing me to be in your program. Have a good morning.
Good morning. So thanks so much for your work. I read a little bit about the network and also watched the videos. And I'd like to talk about SOMOS in a minute. But first, let's get to the nitty gritty, because we need to get folks vaccinated. And I'm sure that this is your priority. Can you talk to us about the science of the mRNA vaccine and why folks should take it?
Let me explain it two different ways. The science way to explain it and the easy way to explain to our folks, here's your program, because the most important at the end of the story is that we need to people to get vaccinated. When you get the whole virus come to your body, it will infect your every cell of your body. It goes inside of them, take care of your area in the nucleus, reproducing itself, go outside, and continue multiplying everywhere. With the vaccine, which is a piece of RNA created, will go inside your body the same way. It will go to your cells. It may your cell produce a substance who, when they go out, your body identify like it's something that's not belong to you, and your body will attack, like it will attack a virus. But in this case, it's controlled, it's a part, and you produce antibody. And that antibody is the one that if the virus comes back to you, at any moment you find it, will kill the virus. 95%, 97% effective, whichever it is. One of the two vaccines most important that we have. At the end of the story, I will ask them my thoughts. What do you prefer? To have the whole virus with all RNA inside, everything, the outside, the inside, who multiply inside of you, who could kill you? Or you would like the vaccine, who could save you? The answer is obviously the vaccine who could save you.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So we know this and we've discussed this, but just, you know, for the purposes of public education, the mRNA vaccine, what it does is that it goes to all of the cells in your body and it asks the cell to reproduce antibodies. So one
antibody, I'm sorry. You make the cell produce an antigen who go outside your cell, and then their body, the cell, the white cells, who are in charge of that, the battalion that we have inside of us, we go recognize that as something that we don't like. It's not ours.
Oh, I see.
And then produce antibody. Then you cover.
Okay. So the vaccine cells sends an antigen to this to the, all of your cells that then asks the white cells to produce antibodies?
It made your cells. You get the RNA, it goes inside your cell. If they produce in there, constantly come out of there, it's an antigen.
Right, okay.
Outside the cell now, our white cell attack. And that's when you produce the antibody.
Okay, so what folks are concerned about is the technology, that they feel that this vaccine somehow reprograms your cells. Can you speak on that?
So the virus can do that. Anything who could go in that direction could reproduce them. Let me explain to you this piece. This is very simple. Yes, it will go inside your cell. Some people could say, it could stay in your cell, and now from now on, your body is going to be attacking whatever comes from there.
Mm-hmm.
Through humanity, even this is different than the other one, the things that allow us to live longer is when the science start working a different way and produce things that help us more. Without this vaccine, everybody at some point will find the virus, and it will be a lottery. It will be a Russian roulette. You could die, you could survive. This is why you hear my comments sometimes. I said, if the Johnson & Johnson vaccine comes out, it's only 65% affected, just use it in young people or people they have the disease. They survive, and young people are more likely to survive the disease. Then don't use that one in elderly. Just get the elderly for the 95, 97% affected. But that's not for me to say. That should be me, the Fauci, to say. He's the one close to the president.
Can you speak a little more directly into your phone? So this is a good thing to know that, the virus is going into your cell, but so is the coronavirus. And in fact, coronavirus is essentially destroying your cells and wreaking havoc. And there are all kinds of studies that show that the coronavirus in your cells stays way beyond the time that the vaccine will stay in your system. So the coronavirus will continue to wreak havoc in your system in some instances for months at least. We know that from studies. So can you take us to Coronavirus 101? Pretend that we're in your class and we're your students. What do we know about the virus 1 year later?
this is what I'm going to talk about. I had it always go to the examples. What we have seen from the beginning is that the most, at this moment, today, in my community, I'll say South of the Bronx, Washington Heights, upper part of Harlem, we have many patients. This is what we have. We have probably 35 to 45. In the first wave, 35 to 40% were infected. And I said, when the second wave is coming back, we're not going to be so damaged. We're going to get some damage, but watch out. Other counties, you only have 15%, 10%, according to some of the government numbers, you're going to get hit hard. Why? The people were negative. I mean, I've been saying since May, June, I wrote the first test in blood to do antibody, to check for IgM, IgG. And I said, let's take everybody IgG now and keep checking every 3 months, that when the vaccine comes, let's don't waste vaccine and people already being positive. Let's use the vaccine only in the people who haven't seen the virus. That way, more people will get the benefit of the vaccine. What happened is, it wasn't like that. As a matter of fact, the first patient that we vaccinated in New York City, it was a patient who got the disease already. That was for me. That's Ramon Talach. It's a waste. He should have been on the line. He should be one of the line behind. You check the antibody. You have antibody? How long? Let's treat the people who haven't seen the virus. We have saved so much many lives. If we are giving 25 million vaccines, the country, and you're giving 10 to people positive, that was a waste. We should give to 10 million people who have not seen the virus. The second thing regarding those issues, vaccine came by. We saw that they give us syringe from 3cc. Another waste. Please change the syringe for 1cc. To put 0.3 or 0.5cc in a 1cc syringe is easy. And you don't waste. You can see more clearly the delineation of 0.5. And you have an extra dose always in that bottle who could save one more life. All of that, we've been working from the beginning. And I know it's the 101 that you want me to talk about, or you want me to talk about what happened, why my community, our community, get hit the most when they were telling them to come back to the apartment, be 6 feet apart. When you live in an apartment with 12 people, one bathroom, how many apartments in your city or neighborhood have 2 bathrooms? They have to use the same people. And by 2 weeks, somebody got infected, come back from the street. The grandmother lived there. The kids lived there. There's only one bathroom. Now they have no job. They were lost. They lost their job. And you want them to clean as many times possible. They have no money to buy food, or they have no money to wash or clean. You can buy Lysol for $100 if you find it. You can buy even soap. You know, right. This is the kind of thing that we need to be prepared for the future. We need to create, and then worse than that, there's no PPE.
Dr. Talaj, hold on, because you've said a few things that are fascinating. So you're telling us that between 35 and 45% of the people in your community were infected with the coronavirus. And you said early on that when the virus comes back, the counties outside are going to see an increase of not 35 to 40%, but maybe 50%.
Well, they will get infected. We will not get so bad because as I said, we've been toast already. We've been burned.
Right, because we've been burned. And so some of us have been carriers silently and have the antibodies.
That's correct.
I want to just repeat this. Because I think it's very important, because it points to the lack of organization in a profit-driven system. So what drives our system is not logic and science, it's profit. And that's how it's organized. Part of what you were saying was, it doesn't make sense to give the vaccine to people who've been silent carriers. So we need to conduct tests to see who's had the virus and who's not had the virus, so that we can save some of the vaccines for those who haven't had it and whose lives could be saved if they got it.
That's correct. That's correct.
Lord Jesus. So we've been giving out the vaccine like hotcakes, without really taking into account who might have been a silent carrier. Again, had we been testing, which the United States failed at terribly, we would have known who had the antibodies and who were silent carriers, which would have been good for the population generally and for just public health statistics and education. Oh, listen, you can be a silent carrier.
The answer they gave me was, we don't know how long it lasts. The immunity of people who got sick, say, neither the vaccine people know that. They're too young. Therefore, if we have tested every single body with the blood or IgG before the vaccine and you have positive and you don't know, follow. Keep following every 3 months, every 6 months. And we know how long it lasts. Therefore, it's the same thing now. We're doing a study now on the first 1,000 people, all our employees, that were because the front line, we get the vaccine, we checking antibodies to see how long it lasts, the vaccine. But we also have a study from the beginning, from April 15, that we opened the first place. Initially, it was a quality one, later quantity, that we know so many people. And we see 9 months, 10 months, still people positive for the IgG. But,
same
that was no use.
Infected once?
Everybody, yes. The people who went to see us.
Mm-hmm. And who's us? Positive. And who's us? Can you tell us who's us?
I mean, the patients, Somos. Remember, we have centers to test people everywhere through the city. And those places, people we found to be positive, we try to follow all the immunity, follow up. And we did with Dr. Henry Chang in Brooklyn, Dr. Jackie Del Monte in Queens and Long Island, ourselves in this area, to check those people, and we looked at the antibody was still there, 10 months down, but there was no follow. In the commission that I am, I said exactly the same thing. I said, why are we going to give the vaccine to people who already had the disease? Why do we check first the antibody? And they told me, the disease doesn't mean they have affected long time. I said, neither the vaccine. We don't know. It's too young to say that. We're going to check now. This is the kind of thing that sometimes common sense, but that doesn't support to come from me. I don't support to be an expert according to books. Let me tell you, according to what's happening down the street, yes, we have become an expert because we know exactly what's going on from day one. We've been out there.
Because you're in the front lines.
Yes, in the real front line. Real front line means in the battle, in any war, hospitals get people sick from the front line. I mean, the people who does not know who is sick are we, the doctor, in the community. Why? Because we continue working. How many doctors are dying in hospitals? I tell you, it's almost 12. Because we continue working.
We were you're listening to the voice. Know. You're listening to the voice of Dr. Ramon Talage, and we're talking about Somos Community Care, a physician-led community health network serving low-income immigrant communities of color. And we're talking about the coronavirus, the science around it, and its impact on the community, but also now about how doctors became experts because they were in the real front lines. I'm Johanna Fernandez, your host of A New Day, and you're listening to WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York. Can you tell us what it's felt like to be a doctor of color in the pandemic, in the front lines?
Well, let me tell you, to have people with it's different to say it's a gift from the Lord to allow us, Jesus, to be the one in the middle, to see what happened there. The inequality was there before. But to be able to work and help people during difficult times, to be the one saying from the beginning, no, you have to use the mask, get your mask on, you know, don't work in centers and do masks. There was certain time that even the most important people say you need to use masks. It drug the moral of the people working and say, what are you talking about? We need to use the mask to protect each other. And I give you example of example that doctors, the way we feel, the way it's online, we feel so happy. First, let me tell you this. March 15, we went to the March 13, 14, we went to the stock exchange. That Monday, we opened the stock exchange because nobody wants to go there. The street looks like a desert. We were the only one walking around, moving around 6 in the morning. We opened it. We protect that. We knew because we put telemedicine, there was a lot of people with symptoms in Queens. When we heard the governor talking about the first things because some kind of party in New Rochelle, I said, my God, who was taking care of the people in the party? Who was serving the people? Who gave the food to the people? I said to them, we had to move. This is going to come and kill us at the most. And you, mm-hmm. this record of that. We said that from the beginning. And we told the authorities, we have 70% positivity right here. But you know, I didn't have to tell the authority that. They're supposed to know. Because any laboratory must tell that to DOH. And DOH
did you say 70, 70 or 17?
70%.
In New York City?
In the place that we were testing. In okay. Queens.
In Queens.
And then in the Bronx. That was the beginning. Before anybody shows up in Elmwood Hospital, we had this positivity rate.
Oh,
and that's
God.
What we claim. We need isolation. We need isolation. We are in the hotspot. But you know what? Nobody knew. This is nobody's fault. But we were in the front line. We seen the situation. We seen the scene. Then what happened? We had to continue working. We're coming back to the building. Small building, small apartment, everybody together. You know the rest regarding that. On top of that, immigrants without papers, afraid to go to emergency room, they stay home, they die home. You know, and if they come back after they bring in to the morgue, nobody's claiming them because they were afraid. And I could go on and on. We have seen from the beginning. But the important is right now that I guess it's for the vaccine. I saw now the mayor of New York, even with the governor, working together. How come we have to do vaccination? And that's where we are today. And the path is there to have a lot of learning, a lot of suffering, a lot of people that there. But we have to change the system. You know, when I heard that the hospital got the vaccine first, the emergency people was that, I said, and applaud that. But when they said the urgent care center get it after, the urgent care, that's the preventive care out there. No. If the pharmacy, does the pharmacy do prevention? No. Preventive care is done by primary care physician in the community. We are champion in vaccination. You know, so far, we're working in those big centers on the school. But for us, to get to our patient, we have no vaccines at all. That's a change. There's no vaccine for us. 700 sites we have in New York City where the patient choose us to be the primary care. They trust us. They believe in us. We haven't got a vaccine to us to give to our patients yet.
Dr. Ramon Talage is the founder of Somos Community Care. He's working on the ground in communities in Queens and Manhattan, the upper part of Manhattan, Washington Heights. And we're talking about the pandemic as it's struck our communities, but also the ways in which physicians at the local level, at the level of the community, are experts that are unacknowledged and who have not gotten the virus and who have not gotten the vaccine to distribute to people that they've been working with. I'm Johanna Fernandez, your host of A New Day, and you're listening to WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York. And we'd like to take calls, 212-209-2877. 212-209-2877. Dr. Talage, please speak a little louder and directly into your mic. 212-209.
Yes, do you hear me better now?
I can. 212-209-2877. Please call us with your stories, your questions. Dr. Talage, this issue that you speak of is so important that that community doctors in community clinics stayed open. And I imagine that someone in the community was more likely to go to you than to a big hospital, especially if they were undocumented. Can you tell us about the Somos Community Care Network? What is Somos?
Well, Somos by itself, community care, doesn't do medical services. The doctors do. It's a network of doctors. Believe it or not, this was created for $8.2 billion spent to transform healthcare, especially in the vulnerable patients, the safety net patients who are the Medicaid, the poor patients in New York. And we save so much money to the state government, let's say 2018, of $500 million saving in the program, we save $336. We are 2,500, close to 1 million patients between Medicaid, Medicare, and other patients in our neighborhoods, poor neighborhoods. We have no offices in Park Avenue or Fifth Avenue. There's nothing wrong with that. Our practices are in poor neighborhoods where Medicaid pieces are, and we decide to open the door there. We are immigrant like that. And yes, somebody said, but you're doing very well. We all do very well. We take care of our people. And in the United States, we see the American dream working in those places the way we do. But the good part of Somos Community Care that we change. This is not a fee-for-service group. It's a value-based payment group. You get a capitation for the amount of patients that you take care of that choose you. They choose personally you to be the one in charge of their health. And then you get paid an amount per month. You see, you don't see it. But the most important, depending on how well you keep your patients, then you have an extra bonus coming based on that, the way we do together. And that's what we're champion. Because see the patient holistically. I don't have to wait the patient come and sit in front of me and I charge. That's a fee for service. No. I have to be sure this is why. When this happens, we jump in. Something's going to happen to our people. We better go in. We put our own money that we save, millions of dollars right now, up to $27 million, our own money, to do the work, to put the tents, to buy PPE, to buy the tests, all of that, to buy meals. Remember, this sanitary crisis will kill so many, but a humanitarian crisis that we have given more than 1,000 million of meals to our people out there. We did that. Then they follow us. We've been there. We did pause to figure out about the school. We have no Wi-Fi. There's no way for that kid to 25%. All of that. We've been ahead of the curve telling what was going on out there. And this time, that's what I said. I make it sound, please, Mr. President, primary cares and their offices are champion in prevention. We know how our patients believe in us. We need the vaccine in our hands. We know how to do it. We don't need to be tested. We don't need to be teach to do vaccination. We are physicians. We are ready to act.
The number to call is 212-209-2877 if you have questions for Dr. Ramon Talage. 212-209-2877, and we've got a caller. Caller, you're on the line. Tell us your name and where you're calling from.
Good morning, Joy. Hello, good morning. How
good
you doing?
Morning. Good morning. You're on the line, yes. WBAI. Welcome. What's your name?
My name is Ed. I'm calling from Jamaica, Queens. Doctor, I hope I'm saying your name right, Dr. Talage, because there's a little problem with perception, huh?
Dr. Talage.
Talage, yeah. First of all, I wanted to thank you. I'm an essential worker also. I've been working at my facility since this outbreak started last year, and I just had a question. I totally agree with what you're saying as far as how the vaccine is being administered. I think it was a waste to put it out the way they did without adequate testing. But number one, do you trust this vaccine? Because personally, I don't. I think it was rushed out. I think based on what you're saying and how it's distributed, there are several faults with it. I think that it's not a vaccine. It's more of a gene therapy, especially the Pfizer and Moderna double dose vaccines. I don't think there's been enough done as far as basic clinical care to address the underlying conditions which cause compromise with this disease. So number one, do you trust the vaccine? And number two, do you trust the testing? The testing, there's been discrepancies with the testing, the PCRN testing, and false positives. I don't think there's been enough done to assure, especially the minority community, Black and Latino, that we can safely take this vaccine, or even with the testing. I'd like to get your opinion on that.
Thank well, first you, Ed, about so vaccine, much.
Yes, I believe in the vaccine. I already have my two doses because I believe in the vaccine.
Dr. Talaj, you know, we need to hear this. Can you speak into your mic?
Yeah, can you hear me now?
Yes.
Yes, I do believe in the vaccine. I have my vaccine already, and most of my doctors already have it because we were in the front line, and some of our employees will be doing testing from the beginning. And the vaccine is better by far to wait because you don't trust. Yes, in the past, we used to do tabulation of data, using papers, putting together. Now we use computers. Still, I understand, but do you prefer the virus? You prefer to play the lottery with the virus? It's up to you. The vaccine is by far much better. Yes, we all using it. Do you know why 60% of the white folks are using it? Only 10% of us want to get it. Can't do that. You know, scare tactics is not good. And then we don't get it. We have to go
okay,
and get
it. Okay, wait, hold on. This is so important. So 60% of white Americans are getting the vaccine and only 10% of people of color. And the question you ask is why? Continue.
No, I just say, I don't like scare tactics to come to our community. The one who suffered the most, you know, and then we are the one paying attention to these things. Yes, we have to be concerned. Everybody, anything has side effects. Aspirin has side effects. Tylenol has side effects. And but the rules, the session don't make the rules. The rule here is vaccine will save lives. If something happened before, later, I know right now, my antibody is 17 times what it's supposed to be. They're so high and so good. You know, still, I use my mask, a social distance, I wash my hands as much as I can, and I take care of all the people. But we have to use the vaccine. Now, regarding testing, you know, you have no idea how much we suffered at the beginning with this testing. It was so difficult to find one stick to test. But we have to wear. You know, in 1915, they fight the war with a small cannon and rifles. It was nothing else. 1940, at the end, there was already, you know, different kind of. We had to work with the vaccine that we have. We, science found this type, PCR, this, that, whichever test, we use it. That's what we have. And when we have, we try to use it and make science with that and help people and look into that. Yes, a 5% false positive or false negative, whichever way you want to go, one for diagnosis, one for not. Yes, we understand that, but the section doesn't make the rules. Let me give you an example, easy example, if you allow me to say. When we had the first test, my son got a disease. He was very sick. We could not approach him. He was alone. He's a doctor. He was in Flushing Hospital, surgeon. And then he got a disease, and they asked him, you need to come back to work 3 days after the fever stopped. And I said, please. That was the government, federal government, Mr. Fauci's rules. I said, please, why don't we do the blood test that we have, the IgG test that I have here, IgM? If he's positive in IgG, he means he got it already a way to save himself, and at the same time, he found a way to kill the virus. Most likely, he won't share the virus to somebody else. Don't send it without the other test. You know, still, they stopped me to do the test. They found every way to the CDC. The 50,000 tests that I bought free, I cannot even use. They was to put me in jail if I use it. That was bad. But you know what? My son went back to work. I had to do the test. I said, you have IgG. You could go back. I don't think you're going to infect anybody. How many people went back to work with 2 days without fever? That they still had traced the virus and bring it back to the place they worked and people got sick. Who knows? That's science, no? We create that. We push science saying, please, don't work. The people go back to work with 3 days. Check the IgG first. You know, I don't know what happened there. Like boys, La voz que clama en el desierto, by Antón de Montesinos.
You've been listening to the voice of Dr. Ramon Talage, and we've been talking about Somos Community Care, a physician-led community health network serving low-income immigrant communities of color. And we've been talking about the pandemic and the impact of the coronavirus on poor communities of color, but also on physicians and how it's turned physicians at the local level into experts. Yet the government is not allowing these physicians who've been on the real front lines access to the vaccine for distribution in their communities. And you've been listening to WBAI at 99.5 FM in New York. Dr. Talage, we've got about 30 seconds. Is there anything else you'd like to leave us with?
Well, yes, I have to correct. We've been in the front line in the vaccine because the governor and the Cuomo and the mayor allow us to be in the Yankee Stadium and in the Queens and the everywhere and the churches doing the vaccine. Obviously, there will be some of our patients there. My last thing to people is this. Think about this. El virus de la soledad, the solitude virus, found the vaccine of hope, la vacuna de la esperanza. Please, please, get the vaccine. The virus will kill you. The vaccine will save you.
The virus of solitude has found the vaccine of hope. Thank you so very much, Dr. Ramon Talage, for your work. And what I gather is that Somos is attempting to bring to the community preventative health care. And we've been talking a lot about preventative health care and the ways in which other countries around the world have achieved that, such as Cuba. Thank you so very much for joining us this morning, and we hope to bring you back to a new day.
Well, anytime. Have a good day.
Have a great day. You've been listening to non-commercial, listener-funded community radio, WBAI, at 99.5 FM in New York. It's 7:57 and 27 degrees in Central Park this morning, Wednesday, February 10th, 2021. We're rebuilding the world together and ushering in a new day. Thanks for tuning in. This show is produced by Ajamu Sankofa, Ellis Maxwell, Andrea Hidalgo, Marcos Maldonado Cruz, and Craig Bahia. Michael G. Haskins is our board operator. We leave you with Molasses by Hiatus Coyote. I'm your host, Johanna Fernandez. See you tomorrow.
Listening to WBAI in New York, the voice of truth since 1960.
I do my hair toss, check my nails. Baby, how you feeling?
And if you're headed out like Lizzo, you grab your cell phone, your keys, and your mask. And if you don't have a WBAI mask yet, call 516-620-3602 and order one in white or black. 516-620-3602 for a contribution of $35 to this listener-sponsored non-corporate radio station. These masks are cool. They're in black or white. They're 100% cotton. They have the saying, "Keep Free Speech Radio Alive" on them. And remember, when you head out the door, you grab your keys, you grab your cell phone, you check yourself, and you grab your mask, and you put it on.